Welcome to Unsquish the Fish.
Unsquish the Fish.
The podcast where bloggers, writers, and Fins fans come to talk everything Miami Dolphins and bask in the glow of aqua and orange. And now, for the host of Unsquish the Fish, Ron Caniff.
Fins up. Fins up. Fins up.
All right, Dolphins fans, welcome to another episode of Unsquish the Fish. This is an episode I've been wanting to do for a long time, and I know most football fans out there are fantasy players. A lot of you are, and I am a huge fantasy player, so I've been wanting to do a show about the Dolphins and everything to do with fantasy, all the players, where they fit in, where they rank, why you should take them, why you shouldn't. So joining me now is Stag Party from Pyromaniac.com and the Pyromaniac Fantasy Football Podcast. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Yeah, Pyromaniac.com, and it's called Fantasy Football Fires, our podcast name. We do it once a week, all off season, you know, and during the season, of course. And, you know, fantasy is kind of our lifeblood, and we love it so much that we have to drink beer and talk about it.
Yeah, it's awesome. I forgot the beer. No beer today for me. I'm sorry, man. I'm failing you already.
No, I it's too early for me. I got to wait at least another hour or so to start drinking on a Friday night.
Understood, man. All right. You ready to jump into this?
Ready when you are. Who's your boy you want to talk about first? It's got to be that guy who got a big deal recently.
Yeah, okay. We can jump into that. That sounds good.
I mean, Ryan Tannehill is a guy who is a plug-and-play starter if you're waiting on a quarterback. Last season, he finished eighth in standard scoring leagues. And he's just a good player when you're looking to kind of mix and match. I don't love him as a weekly guy. I'm all for streaming quarterbacks this season. That's one of my big things. I like to wait and just fill my roster with a bunch of running backs and wide receivers. So I'm waiting on quarterback, and I'm usually ending up with Tannehill and or Eli Manning. And or both, and just kind of plugging and playing based on matchups. And, you know, he got a big deal, so you got to like that fact for him. He doesn't have to worry about anything else. That contract's not holding over his head all season. But the interesting thing is this offense last season, they tailored it to him, and he took a step forward. And you just can't complain about that as a fantasy player. He's improved every single season he's been in the league from a fantasy perspective. So you got to like Ryan Tannehill. Although I think he'll be hard-pressed to come in eighth again, I think he's right there in the 10 to 12 kind of QB range. And what do you kind of feel about Tannehill from your side of it?
Okay, so this will be the first time that the listeners of this show get to hear me talk fantasy. When I talk fantasy, I step out of fandom and I get realistic. I get very analytical.
Perfect.
Don't... You can't be fooled by Tannehill where he finishes 8th, 7th, wherever he may finish, and the reason for that is his durability. He's given you 16 games every year. That's kind of what forces him up to 8. Mm-hmm. You got to look at it game by game, and the thing that will kill you about Tannehill is exactly what you said. You play the matchups, and you can really get some sweet games out of him. But if you play him every single week, I believe last year he had 8 games that he threw 0 or 1 touchdowns. I mean, that is not going to win you weeks. That's not going to win you your league, unfortunately. This year could be different since he seems to improve. Maybe those 0 and 1 touchdown games, those low fantasy scoring games, start to lessen, I would imagine. Maybe they go from 8 to like 4, which would be great. But that's the thing with him. You always look at the end and think, wow, he finished 8th, but it's because he played 16 games. A lot of the other guys didn't.
Oh, definitely. That's one of the things. These guys who are going to play 16 games for you, you got to think of it as a weekly thing. It's great that he ends up finishing the season as 8th, but you're playing a weekly thing. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to take Ryan Tannehill's 8th, and you're trying to couple it with like Eli Manning's 10th. But you're trying to couple that together and get QB5 type performances each week of the season. And if you get top five QB performances every week, you're doing yourself a solid in, you know, your lineup construction. That's one thing. That's why I like waiting on a quarterback. If you spend early capital on a quarterback, say you draft Aaron Rodgers or Andrew Luck, you are not going to want to sit these guys, even with the toughest matchup coming up. You know they're just going to run the ball down the throats of another team, so they're not going to throw it very much. But you know, this is your guy. You spent a first or second round pick on him, and you just can't take him out of the lineup. And that's one of the big things I like with streaming a quarterback, is you've got the ability to mix and match, to make decisions. And hey, there's a guy on a waiver wire with a great week this week. You know, I'm going to roll with it.
Well, one thing I know about playing fantasy football is if there's any position that you draft and you mess up on, QB is generally the easiest to fix. There's always somebody available out there you can pick up and play in a matchup, and sometimes you can just fight a guy and ride him throughout the rest of the season. There's not a lot of other positions you can do that with so easily, in my experience.
No, it's definitely true. The one thing you got to think, though, is Tannehill, you're worried about the offensive line. I would have this offense ranked, you know, top 10, if not for this offensive line, which is, sorry to say it, a little bit putrid. I mean, you only gave up 46 sacks last season, but that number in itself is misleading. They gave up, you know, 210 hits, hurries, and sacks combined, which was the worst in the league. Hopefully you can kind of plug and play. You got that nice little deal at that post-June cut. So I think you got like $13 million in cap space left for the season. So I think you can go ahead and, you know, possibly pick up Mathis. And if you do that, I will like your offense. I think I'll jump you up two spots in overall offense, kind of, you know, ranking-wise. And, you know, offensive lines don't usually get a lot of love in fantasy football, but it's one of the big factors I use in figuring out my running backs and my QB and guys I want to target. Basically, one of the things I want to do in fantasy football is I always want good players on good offenses. I don't really want to have too many Jacksonville Jaguars and too many, you know, Tennessee Titans, or else I'm going to be sitting at home during the playoffs and, you know, playing FanDuel, trying to make my money back.
Okay. One, if I could maybe sell you on the line a little bit, and this isn't a huge sell. I'm not overselling it for sure. Last year, before Brandon Albert went out, if you look at those numbers, it was a top 10 pass protecting line. Mm-hmm. Once Brandon Albert went out, the landscape of that line changed dramatically.
He played, what, 8 games, half the snaps last season?
Yes,
pretty much?
Yes. I mean, that line was looking a lot better. But also, going into the season last year, we had the Pouncey injury. Mm-hmm. And you had Pouncey playing guard instead of center, which was really out of position for him. And then once Brandon Albert got hurt, you took the right tackle, who was a rookie, you moved him to left tackle. You took one of your guards playing them right tackle, and he wasn't even playing guard very well. So that's some of the reasons. I wish I could be more comfortable to know that Brandon Albert is going to be fully healthy week one, but right now we're not sure. So I that's where I could say I can sell this a little bit, but I can't oversell it because we're really still not sure about Brandon Albert. And it looks like they're going to go with a guy named Jason Fox at left tackle instead of just doing all the switching around. Let everybody just kind of settle into their positions. But as Dolphins fans, we know it's those guard positions, man. That's the weak link of our line. We're good on the ends as long as we've got Brandon Albert. Center, we got one of the best in the league with Pouncey. Those guard positions are huge question marks for us, and that's why every Dolphins fan is wanting Evan Mathis.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I think healthy, they're definitely a top 20 unit healthy. I mean, you're going up, you know, 12 spots from the bottom of the barrel. So you've got room for improvement, definitely. It's a younger offensive line, but you need Brandon Albert back out there healthy. He definitely a different line when he was in there. And I hope, you know, for everybody's sake, that he comes back completely healthy, because this is going to be one of those units that's going to be right on the top 10 kind of fantasy potential as a whole. Because you've got weapons in the backfield, you've got weapons at tight end, you've got weapons on the outside, and you could have a really great weapon should he come back healthy. Well, and that's one of the things we'll discuss a little bit later. But when it comes to Tannehill, one of the things you get from him is, you know, rushing bonus. Everybody likes to say, you know, Ryan Tannehill's wide receiver, he's a great athlete. And yeah, they don't, when they talk about Tannehill being like a wide receiver in college, I don't think people understand how good of a wide receiver he was there for those first two years. 112 receptions between the first 2 years, 1,596 yards and 10 TDs receiving. and that's kind of his college career. And those are, you know, great numbers for wide receivers, especially he could have been the next great white hope at wide receiver, the next Wes Welker type with a much bigger body.
That's actually interesting. You know, I never actually looked at Tannehill's wide receiver stats. I only know as a Dolphin fan that he used to play wide receiver. That's all I knew.
Yeah, I mean, that's all everybody knows, but nobody's actually like dug into the numbers. They were saying that he could have potentially been a first-round pick as a wide receiver after his sophomore year. And then he kind of made the switch, and yeah, now he's, what, the $96 million man, so I think he made the right decision there.
Oh, definitely, and I think like you said before, he's improving every single year, and especially exciting that his quarterback experience in college was much more limited compared to most of the players that come in. And a lot of these transition players don't have or see the success. A lot of times they end up transitioning back trying to find another position to play in the NFL because they're not cut out to be quarterbacks.
Are we talking Terrell Pryor again?
Exactly was the name that came to my brain when I said that.
So Tannehill, his rushing numbers have improved every year. His finish among quarterbacks in rushing yards started out 12th in 2012, then 10th in 2013, ended up 5th in rushing yards last year. So he's making steady improvements every year. He's getting more accurate, and the weapons around him are getting better. So there's definitely not a reason to dislike Tannehill. You just have to realize that if you're going to own him, you can't play him every week and feel great about your position. One of the things that, you know, we at Pyro, we use strength of schedule. You know, last year, Tannehill had the easiest strength of schedule among quarterbacks. So that's not the case this year. It's middle of the road, but it's not enough to push us off him, saying he's going to finish out of like the top 12. I think right now we have him ranked at right around 12 or 13 among quarterbacks. You know, we've got Sam Bradford, should he start slightly ahead. And that's just because of offense, even though you guys are running the same one, and offensive line. And I, you know, just think they're going to pick up the pace of play a little bit more. I think Lazor's got some few more tricks up his sleeves that he's going to wait to bust out this year now that they've got a little more continuity and, you know, wide receivers that apparently like the quarterback.
Yeah, definitely, man. I agree. So you sound a little high on Sam Bradford. I'm just speaking from fantasy point of view. You've got him around that 11th, 12th spot as well. Is that where you see him ranked?
Yeah, I think I moved him down a little bit today just because of the concerns that he's not getting into 11 and 11 yet. So I think I pushed him down from 12 to maybe 14. I pushed Tannehill ahead of him just today. But overall, I feel like they're, you know, fairly similar players, just with Bradford's going to do it all with his arm, while, you know, Tannehill can give you that sort of run game bonus that you're not going to get from Bradford. But I just feel so much better about that offensive line than I do the Dolphin offensive line.
Even with the evacuation of Mathis, I mean, he was like a Pro Bowl guard. I mean, that definitely puts a hit on their line.
Yeah, they've got their bookends are like, if you're starting up a team tomorrow and you're taking a pair of tackles, you're choosing between the Cowboys and the Eagles. Okay. On who you're taking. And I'm going to take, if I'm just taking the tackles, I'm taking Jason Peters and I'm taking Lane Johnson. Plus, with the zone blocking, the scheme they use, I think they could survive. I think Evan Mathis was a bit of a product of that system. And, you know, that's why I'm hoping he goes to the Dolphins, where it's, you know, pretty much it's the same system.
It is the same. It's the same offense, just 80% slower. Really.
Yeah, yeah.
Same exact offense. The way they layer in the offense, the way the reads are, the way the routes are run, it is literally like watching a mirror image. It's like pushing a little bit fast forward on your recorder and watching it a little faster when you watch Philly versus Miami.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. So that's why I'm hoping he goes there. I think if he maybe like goes to a different team, say, I don't know, the Bills or, you know, somebody ugly like that that want to run a power run offense, I don't think he's going to be nearly the same player he was for Philly last year.
It took him so long to even get to where he was. I mean, he was 30-something years old. He was on the Dolphins team for a little while, I think in 08 or 09, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he bounced around quite a bit.
Before we wrap up on Tannehill, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the strategy of, okay, if you're thinking Tannehill, you're thinking, all right, I do want to draft this guy. I'm gonna go with it. I'm gonna go for it. he's probably around 12. So if you're in a 12-team league, you're thinking you could probably grab him as the last QB. But mm-hmm. I've heard you mention pairing him with Manning, but Manning may go ahead of Tannehill. He may be gone. Who else would you pair him with? Are you thinking maybe Roethlisberger, Palmer? If you're going to go that strategy, what do you think being a realistic goal to actually be able to get in there and get these two guys?
If you want Manning and Tannehill, Manning's ADP right now is 8th round, Tannehill is 9. So they're going in the same range to where you'd almost have to draft them back-to-back, which I don't really do. So what I'd do is I'd look for, you know, a high upside weekly guy. I'd look for a Carson Palmer when he's not playing the NFC West. I'd look for, you know, Teddy Bridgewater when he's playing the Chicago Bears. Unfortunately, being a Chicago guy, I just know that our defense isn't very good. I really like a Teddy Bridgewater to kind of match and play with a Tannehill. I think they've got very sort of similar skill sets, slightly different builds, and hopefully, but now Bridgewater's got the cancer, so I don't know how that's going to work out. And I'm speaking of Mike Wallace.
Yeah, you had me freaking out for a second. I'm like, what are you talking about? Okay, I got you, Mike Wallace. Yeah, I got you there.
So there's some things to look forward to. There's definitely a bunch of guys you could mix and match with. I mean, even Jay Cutler, Colin Kaepernick, who people are a little bit down on this year, but can produce big weekly upsides. Guys like that. I think there's a clump of quarterbacks from, you know, about 16 to 21 that can be good weekly plays for you if you're mixing and matching with a Tannehill.
What about Tannehill's highest upside? Let's say they get Mathis, and let's say this line gels together really nicely, and it becomes, say, a middle-of-the-road, number 15th-ranked line, and these weapons that supposedly are supposed to be better for Tannehill, it does work out. Where could you see Tannehill going? How high?
I think he could finish right about probably Matt Ryan from last season range, which is quarterback 7, where he's going to complete maybe right over 4,500 yards, a slight uptick in TDs to maybe 29 or 30. If he hits 30, he's going to be in a totally different echelon of quarterback that I don't think you guys are ready for. and, you know, probably around 12 to 14 interceptions and another 300 yards rushing with maybe – you know, 2 touchdowns. So I think right around, he could sneak into the top 5 like an Andy Dalton did a couple years ago. I think that's his high upside. I don't think he's ever going to be a guy who finishes top 2 at the position like an Aaron Rodgers or an Andrew Luck.
All right, cool, man, cool. All right, let's move on to someone else. You got anybody in mind, or would you like me to pick?
How about the defense? No, in fantasy, defense and special teams don't get a lot of love. But the Dolphins are, like, one of my targets going into the season. I believe they could take a big, big step forward. And it all is on the back end of Ndamukong Suh. But I think when you think about a fantasy defense, here's things I want. I want a guy who's a monster penetrator in the middle. I want 1 to 2 edge rushers who are plus. One middle linebacker who can just tackle. And then a ball hawk at corner, and hopefully, you know, a heavy hitter at safety. So I think you've got all those kind of pieces to be a great fantasy defense and special teams. Last season, they finished 4th in the standard scoring leagues with 107 fantasy points. And they project as a top 6 unit next season for us. Just looking at the numbers, tied for 16 in sacks, I think that's something they could definitely improve on with Sue coming to town. Fumble recoveries, there's no way to predict those. Those are pretty variable. But if you've got, you know, the Delmas who will lay some lumber in the back, you got, you know, linebackers who can flow to the ball, and those ends who are, you know, got the good speed rush, I think you're going to be, you know, top half of the league. And then, of course, you know, you've got, what, Spider-Man, corner, and Brent Grimes for at least another season. And then, the only other thing that really matters is, you know, the special teams. And I think with the combination of players that they have there, returning the ball, whether they're going to use Landry there whether they're going to use Ajayi on kickoff returns, because he was a very effective kickoff returner earlier in his career at Boise State. I think you've got a lot of good athletic options to return the ball for you that I really like this unit, and I think they can cause some havoc.
So you could actually see them as being targeted, you know, being drafted in most leagues.
I think they could be drafted in most leagues. Like, I wait to the second to last round to draft my defense. I'm not going to grab one early. So I'm not going to get the Bills. I'm not going to get the Seahawks. And I'm not going to get, you know, the Rams or anybody like that. So when it comes around to me and I'm in the middle of the round and I'm looking for somebody who I think can blow up, I think the Dolphins are one of those units that have a chance to kind of push themselves up the rankings and push themselves into an entirely new kind of fantasy defense category where they're exciting to watch because they're causing havoc all around the defense.
Where I would say also is a benefit in the way I like to draft defenses, I also do the same thing. I draft second to last round, but I don't always necessarily project them out to the season, and I look at their first few matchups because defenses are so hard to predict, which is the reason why you draft them last. Yeah, sure, they score lots of points. Good luck guessing who's going to be the one that does. And if you look at their beginning matchups, you got Washington, Jacksonville, Bills and Jets. Bills may give them a little bit of trouble. They've got some weapons. But the first three out of four might be a defense you can ride with and then make a decision. Okay, am I keeping them or am I dropping them and finding somebody else?
I definitely agree with that. I'm all for streaming defenses. I try to do it. But I'd rather take when I'm throwing my dart to pick my defense, I want to pick somebody I like and who I think could finish, you know, very high. So that's why the Dolphins are one of my kind of targets there. The streaming aspect does come into play, especially for the first couple weeks, because I think the best defense last season to own was whoever was playing the Jacksonville Jaguars every week.
That's true. That's a good point. All right, cool. Anything else about the defense?
No, I just wanted to give the defense a little bit of love on a fantasy show. Nobody ever seems to do it, so I'm just going to give them a little bit of a plug now that they can all go back and sit on their laurels.
All right, sounds good, man. Let's talk about DeVante Parker.
The man, the myth, the legend that everybody wants to know about.
Yeah, obviously, Dolphins fans, he came into OTAs and he was just killing it. Now, it's not pads. These guys aren't hitting. The cornerbacks are backing off a little. I understand all that, but he was really looking sweet. And then they decided, you know what, we need to go back in and fix that that screw from the previous injury he had the year before, and it kind of took a little air out balloon for sure.
It took a lot of air out. I think at one point we had him like up to wide receiver 33 in our rankings, and I think he's probably dropped 10 spots since then. Just looking back, he broke his, fifth metatarsal in his foot, got a screw implanted, and now what they did with this surgery is went in and put a bigger screw there, from my understanding. And trust me, I'm not a doctor, but to everybody who's explained that to me, that just sounds like it's not any fun. And he's got to be in a boot for, 6 weeks, and then he can get back to being on the field. But he's missing this all-important time, during these OTAs and just kind of working out with the team and building his strength and doing things like that. And this is sort of one of those injuries that unfortunately can like linger. Julio Jones pretty much had the same injury a couple years back, and he was just, not really the same for a while and sort of played through it. And it didn't help his fantasy value any. And when you're looking to draft a fantasy player, the last thing you want to do is draft a guy who's injured and injury prone, because it just causes like ulcers and stuff that you don't want to have, and you're going to injure yourself.
I agree on that. So as far as this year goes, if you're drafted in just a redraft league, probably maybe looking at him as if you drafted him as your fifth or sixth wide receiver, you feel okay with that, or are you just staying away?
No, I draft him. I'd still draft him as a wide receiver. As my wide receiver four, I'd feel pretty comfortable because it's at wide receiver four, I'm throwing darts to get home runs. You win leagues with young guys who have the potential to break out. and you don't win leagues with Anquan Boldins and Greg Jennings, and you don't, yeah, they put up the numbers and they're there at the end of the season, but they're not giving you performances that make you want to start them. And when you do start them, you're just like, well, here's 5 points, and you barely even enjoy yourself playing fantasy. So he's still a guy I'm going to target, and luckily, Devontae Parker was one of our favorite wide receivers coming out of the draft this year. He was definitely third on a lot of people's lists. One of Pyromaniac Mo does interviews. He interviewed David T. Thomas, who's an NFL scout out in New York. Great guy, great lines, and he had him as his, you know, top wide receiver in this draft class. So I'm excited. I think he's right along the lines of Amari Cooper. If he went into the kind of the same position and didn't have an injury, and he just ended up on the Raiders at three somehow, I would probably project the same thing I'd project for Amari Cooper, which is like 80 catches, for, you know, 10, 10, 50 and, you know, 6 or 7 TDs. And I'd probably give the edge to TDs to Parker, in all honesty. So he's definitely a guy who's still well, well on my radar. You know, he beat up an NFL, you know, caliber defense at Louisville, you know, when they played FSU for like 214 yards.
Yeah, that was a pretty epic game from him for sure.
So, and if you watch his highlight tape and everything, you just got to be excited about watching the guy play, because he high points the ball, and he is a guy who reminds me, you know, directly of AJ Green. You know, similar kind of lean body style. But they still use their body well and run well enough in the 4.4s, 4.5 range to separate from corners and, you know, just cause havoc for these guys. And I think he's a great route runner coming out of Louisville. He's had, you know, an accurate quarterback throwing him the ball in Teddy Bridgewater 2 years ago. So I think he's used to that pro-style kind of offense. And I think I really like Devontae Parker. It's just I'm scared off a little bit by the injury.
Okay, I can understand that. So let's talk maybe in a dynasty league. Where's Devontae Parker going? What round could you see drafting him if you're drafting a dynasty league this year?
Depending on your style, team needs, winning, waiting for it, or you know, going for it this year.
Let's say it's a wipeout clean, brand new dynasty league. No one's drafted anyone yet.
Brand new dynasty league. When would he go? Probably around, wide receivers are so safe in dynasty leagues that they get pushed up a lot. So, you know, the first pick in a dynasty league is like a Julio or a Dez or a Demaryius typically, and then you'll throw the Andrew Luck in there, and then the quarterbacks are getting pushed besides Andrew Luck down a little bit, and so are all the running backs. So I think I would target in a brand new wipeout dynasty league probably in the 6th round, and that might be a little late.
Yeah, that seems very late for a guy that could be a top 10 wide receiver in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I haven't done very many brand new dynasty startups this year, so my ADP kind of siphon and feeling on that isn't where it needs to be.
No, that's honest. Cool. I guess I kind of threw a curveball out there. I'm sorry about that.
I mean, in a regular dynasty draft where you're drafting just rookies this season, mm-hmm. I would put him right at player 5.
Okay.
It's basically, you know, whenever you want to take Gurley and Gordon, I'm okay with, depending on your style of need. And then, you know, whenever you take Amari Cooper, Kevin White, and Devontae Parker, it's all pretty much a wash for me. I like, you know, the thing is, I would probably take Devontae Parker at this point ahead of Kevin White in a dynasty league, because I have no idea who the quarterback's going to be in Chicago in 2 years. And if you could tell me, I'd appreciate it. As a Bear fan, a little bit.
Okay, I gotcha. So you think Cutler's heading out here soon?
I think we tried to trade him for a pack of smokes in the jail cell already, but Smoke and Jay must have smoked them all because we didn't get that deal.
Oh well, man, we'll see what happens next. All right, so how about, this is somebody near and dear to my heart, how about Landry, Jarvis Landry? What are you feeling about him?
Juice? I like Juice. Kind of thirsty right now, speaking of it. But here's the thing with Jarvis Landry. To be more than just a PPR receiver, a point per reception receiver, he's got to, you know, get up over that 10-yard per catch mark, or else he's just going to be a guy who's all volume, and then you don't know what else you're going to get. Do I think they're going to run him on different routes next season? No, I think they're going to run him on the same exact thing, and he's going to be the safety blanket, but I still like him. He's my number 29 receiver right now. So I'm targeting him as a wide receiver 3. He gets a boost to like 5 spots in PPR leagues. I'd rank him about wide receiver 24. He's just great hands. You want to know some crazy stat for you? Of all receivers with 80 or more targets last season, Jarvis Landry had a 75 catch percentage, which was second best in the league. Can you tell me who first was?
Kenny Stills?
Yeah, that's correct. That's just a crazy stat. And everybody keeps – we'll talk about Stills in a minute. But I don't like how everybody just keeps crapping on Kenny Stills. Like, he's a bad player. And we'll talk about that in length here a bit. But Jarvis Landry, I really, really like this season. 59 passes in his last 8 games, 5 touchdowns in his last game, and one of those was a double-digit touchdown game, to which I played him in FanDuel and won some money, so I appreciate you, Jarvis. gotta love that. And, as long as he keeps, doing what he's doing and being efficient, and hopefully he picks up his efficiency a little bit in terms of the yards per catch department, if he can get to a Wes Welker like 10.3, I'm really going to like him because I think he has a chance to catch 90 to 100 passes this season. I think would he end up there 84 last year?
Yeah, it was the mid-80s. And you got to consider, and I'm sure you know this, he really didn't get a lot of looks at receiver the first quarter of the season at least.
Oh, yeah, he was your, punt returner, returner?
He was mostly just the returner, and he was a good returner.
Yeah.
But he really wasn't. I mean, a full season. Not only is he in his second year, so he has a little bit more experience, second year in the offense, quarterback second year in the offense, but now he's going to get to do the full season and get to be in this offense the way he was the second half of the season. I think everyone's a little low on him. Now, I'm not going to go push him up to like a clad, wide receiver 2, 15th in the league, but I could see him more finishing around closer to the 20th spot, like right at the end of the 2s, right at the beginning of the 3s. And I see him being ranked by a lot of people, maybe a 3 or maybe one of your first 4s. And I just don't see that. I really think he's going to have a good season.
Yeah, I think he's going to have a great season. I mean, if you just look at what he did the last 8 games and kind of extrapolate that off, it was 59 catches. That'd be, 108 or 118. My math's terrible today. You're thinking about that, drooling a little bit. But 75% catch percentage is just not repeatable, unfortunately. I think he's very good. I think he's got some of the best hands in the league. I do not doubt that. I've seen him make some sick one-handed catches that are on par with the ODBs of the world. Nah, I'm waiting for that contest. If I have to go to a game in a different place this year, I think I might want to go out to the ODB and Jarvis Landry catch-off pregame that we've been hearing so much about lately.
Yeah, those guys both have just amazing hands. Imagine they were on the same team at LSU.
And they had receiver. And they had a pro quarterback who was okay.
I mean, he should have come out of college just looking like the next Andrew Luck with those two guys at receiver. And he didn't. That should have been a clue, perhaps, too.
Yeah.
Who was it that drafted him? Was it Tennessee?
Tennessee.
Yeah.
Tennessee Titans. He started a couple games there. Had one big fantasy week for us that won me some money in FanDuel, so I appreciate him as well. It's like, just draft all LSU players. You'll be all right. And then there's, just the things about Landry. Playing in the slot and being one of those type of guys who I think he can run the full variety of routes. I don't want him to be my go route guy though. That's something I know. He's kind of slower. I know he was injured at the combine.
No, he's a little bit slower. I mean, he's faster on the field than he showed in that combine number, but he isn't
Sure.
He isn't the fastest receiver on the field. No, that's we know for sure.
And you don't necessarily need that. Especially, today's fastest man in the NFL, self-proclaimed, all he did was, snipe red zone targets somehow. I can't even begin to explain that to you.
All right, man. Anything else on Landry there before we move on? I guess maybe to Stills?
No, Landry, I like him a lot in PPR, and I agree that if he's my wide receiver two in PPR, I have no reservations. If he's my wide receiver two in standard, I'm scared out of my mind. If he's my wide receiver three in standard scoring, I'm not worried about it at all. I think he's going to be, you know, a 90-plus catch guy, hopefully eclipsing 1,000 yards somehow. Hopefully he can figure that out. But I don't think he's ever going to score more than 6 or 7 touchdowns in a season.
Let's say he was a wide receiver two in standard. I think that might depend on how you drafted. If you maybe you went on with one of the studs at wide receiver, so your other wide receiver is like a top five guy,
yep,
and you got yourself stacked with a pretty good running back as well, because there's some pretty good running backs that are going late in the first.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you were sitting there with that scenario, that might not be as bad as some other scenarios. I think it might depend on how you drafted as to whether you would want Landry as your second guy or not. I would imagine, too, you probably at least have a good quarterback and or tight end that you threw in there to have Landry as your wide receiver too.
You hope so. You hope you load it up at other spots or else you were drunk drafting.
Yeah, but I have drunk drafted before on many a time, but that's for sure. But I could see, but he has, when I draft guys, I like to look at the floor. What's their floor look like? I mean, everyone wants to look at the ceiling, and I love to think about the ceiling, but I'd like to look at what's this guy's floor? What could I see him if his season is just, meh, okay, what could he do? And I see Jarvis Landry as having a fairly high floor. Maybe he doesn't have as high a ceiling as a lot of guys, but he has a pretty high floor, and I think he's going to give you some consistency and throw in some touchdowns as well.
Yeah, I think he's one of the safer picks. I mean, nobody's, like, ultimately safe because everybody gets injured eventually. But Jarvis Landry probably has, like, if you're drafting him as a wide receiver three, I think he's got wide receiver two upside and wide receiver four downside. And that's just kind of the way it is. And, you know, some people like that. Some people like the safer players. Some people don't. Some people like the lottery tickets. Some people like the Martavis Bryants of the world rather than the Jarvis Landrys of the world. And that's just one style of fantasy football that nobody can really argue with because it's, hey, it's your decision. But, yeah, Jarvis's floor is so low because after, you know, what, week 9, he didn't catch less than 5 passes in a game. Every time he got, you know, he had a little outlier there in week 16 against Minnesota where he only gained 31 yards. But other than that, he was getting you a 5 for like 50 every week. And you just weren't complaining. And if you're in a PPR league, he's giving you 10 points a week and you're just going to feel okay about it. And like, he might never give you, you know, too many crazy games to where he's catching. I think he's got double digit catch kind of appeal. Definitely. I mean, he had what? I think there was a streak there where he had 3 of 4 with 8 catches, so I think he can get you 10 catches in a week, no problem. He hasn't done it yet, but I think there's definitely that kind of upside. But I don't know if he'll ever be like 160 yards a game type of guy, the true kind of game breaker you're looking for at some points in your draft. I mean, things happen. Coverages get blown, and so he trots down the sideline 80 yards and then is having another, you know, day like he has every other day and catches, you know, 60 or so yards a game. And, you know, there, he's at 140 with a touchdown. And you're like, all right, this is the best I'm ever going to get from Jarvis Landry. And you wouldn't be mad about it.
Okay, I think that's fair. That's fair. All right, man, let's move on to Kenny Stills because you said you don't like how people bag on Stills. And I got to be honest with you, I have my questions on Kenny Stills. I'm not really sure about him. He's one of my less exciting pickups that the Dolphins made this offseason. So sell me on Kenny Stills and why you like him.
What are your questions on Kenny Stills is the real question.
I question why they jettisoned him from a team that Marquise Colson is pretty much done. You just lost Jimmy Graham. Brandon Cooks could be an injury risk. You're only paying him $400,000 this year, and you traded him. I gotta wonder why. I gotta wonder what was going on there. Is it an on-field thing? Is it an off-field thing? I'm just not sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest head-scratcher I've ever had in my life. Like, okay, I get trying to get younger. I get trading expensive assets for younger players. I get all that. And then you pull this move for me, and I lose my mind, in all honesty. I have no idea what the Saints were thinking. Maybe they know something, you know, I don't as of right now, but the thing is, the talent is there. He's a good athlete, you know, one of the things I was watching coming up to the season in Kiper and McShay's mock drafts, they always had you maybe taking a Breshad Perriman, and it's like, nobody on the field can stretch the field vertically. And I'm like, have you guys ever seen Kenny Stills play a down? Because this guy could take the top off of defense. You know, he's not an elite athlete in space where he can use his quickness like a Brandon Cooks, but he's got great deep speed, 4.38 at the combine, one of the best. He's a highly sought after high school recruit. When I look for guys who are kind of late round draft picks, and that's one of the things I look for, is sort of how they figured out their early season, early career at going to the school. Were they highly sought after, or were they the Kevin White of the world where nobody knew about him until he, you know, showed up at West Virginia and caught like 115 passes all of a sudden? So I really like kind of Kenny Stills. His background numbers are just crazy. I mean, led the league with guys with over 80 targets and catch percentage at 75.9. And then there's just things like, his rookie year, he averaged over 20 yards a catch. Last season, caught 931 yards. But the thing that makes me think, oh, he's very good. And also there's this number that I use called yards per target. It's like an efficiency rating. So you're thinking about guys who don't catch a lot of passes, they've got a lower, you know, yards per target number. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a yards per attempt number for a quarterback. It's just kind of balances out some things for, you know, wide receivers. And his was second in the league to or third in the league to DeSean Jackson, who's, you know, very, very good at what he does on deep balls. And the thing is, like, I just don't get it. Him, and he's kind of in that same sort of elite field stretcher mold of DeSean Jackson. And just for $400,000 doesn't get nearly the same pub. But in long-distance leagues where they reward you for guys taking it 80 yards, Kenny Stills is a type that you love. And if everything is true from Deion Sims lately, and the word is that Tannehill's throwing a great deep ball, I think Kenny Stills has, you know, chances to connect on the deep ball, be that vertical field stretcher, and kind of take the top off of defense, which I also think Devontae Parker can do. But Kenny Stills is a guy, I think, who's a specialty player who can still do that. And, you know, I think he's Mike Wallace 2.0 without the headaches.
Yeah, I get that. But from a fantasy perspective, and I can say this as a Dolphins fan, especially once Parker comes back and he's a bigger part of the offense, I mean, you're not taking Jarvis Landry off the field, right?
Nope.
Period. Once Parker gets back and he's actually really part of this, you're probably not taking him off the field. So Kenny Stills is option number three. I mean, you got Jordan Cameron. They've got two pretty good backs they like. I just see this guy having a game or two, but I don't really see him as draftable in standard, let's say, a 15-round, 12-team league. I just don't know if he's even draftable.
He's right at the edge of being draftable for me. I think I've got him rated as a wide receiver 5. So while I was blowing all that smoke, I have realistic expectations. They did use a lot of 3-receiver sets last season, so I'm kind of excited about that. I mean, I think your base formation last season was 3 receivers, 1 tight end, and 1 running back.
Yeah, that's generally the way that they run it, but some of that is maybe because they've only had the 1 running back, really. I mean, our running back number 2 last year, they couldn't figure that out. And I think it could change a little bit this year when you talked about maybe Lazor bringing some stuff, pulling some stuff out of the hat, some different tricks. That might be something that we see this year.
I mean, do you guys even have a fullback on the roster?
No, we do not. No, there is no fullback on the roster. I actually talked about that last episode. I wish that they need to find somebody to at least play a little fullback. But they'll do two. I'd like to see them two, and thinking they're going to do 2 running backs now, because Lamar Miller, he doesn't run well inside the tackles. He doesn't do the short yardage well. So if you really want to kind of have that threat but not take Lamar Miller off the field, you could bring Ajayi in with Miller. And
we'll talk about those guys in a minute. There's
Definitely. But I could see – they got Greg Jennings too. They didn't bring him in just to be a player's coach. I think he's going to get on the field too. I don't see the opportunity for Kenny Stills, but I do love what he does for the Dolphins offense as just the football side of it. We need that threat. Our offense, the way it's set up, needs a vertical threat. It has to have it in order to set up the layers of offense the way they want. And so I love what he does for the offense as a whole. I just don't know that fantasy wise, if he's, it's just realistic to really even have him. Maybe he's just somebody you kind of keep your eyeball on. And if he does a little something more than you thought, you go pick him up.
Well, there's a couple different things you could do with Kenny Stills. You could start him early, depending on what happens with Devontae Parker. I'm not hearing pup list or anything like that as of yet from the news wire or anything. So, but if he ends up on, you know, a pup list, then, hey, he's a great option for six games. I think he'll also, if you play MFL best ball leagues where you're looking for guys to explode here and there, he's a great option there. And also, you know, just based on matchups. So maybe, hey, you guys are playing the Jets this week. Revis is going to be on Parker. Then, you know, Cromartie might move around a little bit and play Landry in the slot. Or they might, you know, just put a bum on Stills. Yeah, throw him out there, see what happens. I think he'll be, you know, one of those daily kind of streamer guys where you're playing matchups and looking for him. But I think he's got a lot of upside. And if he could get on the field consistently enough, not too much of a downside. I mean, he could put up zeros, but I think if he gets targets, he's going to catch 75% of them and, you know, average something like 18 to 20 yards a catch.
Any receiver that could come in and average 18 to 20 yards a catch on our offense where we've had such a low, because, you know, Jarvis Landry last year, I think he only averaged 9 yards a catch. If I'm not mistaken. So that would be a huge plus just for the team. I mean, that would be amazing if that could happen. That would mean that we're getting some connection with the long ball, mm-hmm. and Kenny Stills would definitely then, they're not taking him off the field then. You know, that he's going to see a lot more playing time if Tannehill and him can find a way to connect, because obviously Tannehill and Wallace could not. All right, man. Anything else on Stills before maybe we move on to the backs or?
Just one more thing. The Dolphins throw it to their wide receivers 61.3% of all attempts. So there's enough to kind of go around on the outside. 364 total passes to the wide receivers last season, which is above league average. You know, they also throw it to the tight end above league average a bit as well. And they're not really the dump off to the running back type of offense. So you've got that going for you if you're looking for a third wide receiver. They're going to be in a three wide receiver formations a lot. So you got to like that. If you're just looking for a guy who could have, you know, just some appeal and you don't want the, you know, old guys of the world clogging up your wide receiver five spot, that's a guy to look for, and Kenny Stills. But yeah, I think there's a lot to talk about with the backfield, lots of different things. I'm a big fan of Ajayi, even though he fell to the fifth round. I had him as my third ranked back in the draft. He's an interesting blend. Now, my player comparison for Ajayi, if you can guess it, was Lamar Miller. Because they're both right around, you know, 6 foot, 215 or so pounds, even though I hear Lamar Miller's packing on the weight these days. That's something we could talk about here in a minute. But he just reminds me of that, where he's better running on the outside and not in between the tackles. He's very loose hipped, so he doesn't like he's a powerful weight room guy, but he doesn't do it between the tackles like many would think. And that's what kind of concerns me, is they seem like the same type of back almost. So I'm looking forward and looking at them like, all right, the only real hope I have for Ajayi is Lamar Miller going down, and I really like Lamar Miller, so I don't want that to happen. But I think now that they've got two of the same style runners, that they might tweak the offense a little bit, and it'll just be hey, 15 for Lamar and 10 for Jay Ajayi. And that'll be how it goes. And I could split third down reps as well, because Ajayi's more than a capable pass catcher.
Definitely.
I mean, I think this could, if they wanted to, they could go full on 50-50 split, and just give it to each of these guys, you know, split series and stuff like that, because I think they both have the same strengths and weaknesses. I still don't know that you have a true pounder in the middle, but I don't know if that's something they need to operate. I mean, you were one of the most efficient run offenses in the league last season, second to only Seattle in terms of yards per carry, and we already talked about how bad the offensive line was, and if you get any improvement there, you got to think that that's going to at least maintain the same. And a lot of that is run scheme and the way they do things, and the zone blocking and the pulling of the guards and the traps they kind of run to get Lamar Miller and hopefully now Jay Ajayi to the outside with a little bit of room to work.
Okay, that's fair. I think, too, and I know about that number, that 4.7 yards per carry, it might be a teeny bit of fool's gold in the fact that the long runs from the quarterbacks. I think that Russell Wilson and Tannehill both have some of these longer runs, because when Tannehill runs, he doesn't just try and get 3-4 yards. Like, when he runs, it's not often, but man, it's some long runs. I think that might skew the number a little bit. Is that quarterback run number calculated in that? I would imagine it is.
It is, but Ryan Tannehill's run number is only like 6 or 7 yards a carry, because they also factor in, you know, kneel downs and things like that.
All right, so then it really isn't the reason. True number.
His true number last season was 5.6 yards per carry.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, he had 4 that were over 20, which is, you know, great for a quarterback. Averaged, what, 19.4 a game. But then there's Lamar Miller, who had, you know, 20-plus yard runs, and he was just effective. I think Lamar Miller is still getting the goal line work, as much as they want to talk about Ajayi. Have you heard the same thing about Lamar Miller? Is he really trying to pack on the pounds so they'll give him carries?
Yes, over
15.
And I've talked about this a few different times, and this is my thought on that, and I'm just going to say it quickly because the people that listen to the show have heard me say it before. Mm-hmm. If you're not great at something, or you're just bad at something, you can try and get a little bit better, but I've never seen any player at anything be not good at something and then all of a sudden be very good at something. Stick with what you do good. I'm nervous about him gaining weight and losing a little bit of that shiftiness, losing a little bit of that speed, and then maybe he's runs between the tackles a little bit more. But, you know, does he lose the things he does well and become a little bit more mediocre? That was my only concern on it. But, yes, it is common knowledge down here in South Florida. He is trying to pack on that muscle to be more of an every down back.
Here's things I don't like in fantasy football. There's a couple things I do like. I like running backs losing weight, and I like wide receivers gaining muscle. Things I don't like are running backs gaining weight and wide receivers who do nothing. It concerns me a little. Let's see. Last year he had a 97-yard carry. Is he going to be able to do that, you know, 10 pounds heavier? Maybe. Is he going to be able to average over 5 yards a carry, you know, 10 pounds heavier? Probably doubt it. Is he going to get more than 8 rushing touchdowns just because he gained 10 extra pounds? Doubt it. Maybe he gets the 10. So it's a little bit concerning. I have Lamar Miller ranked running back 13 in standard scoring leagues right now. He finished last season as 9. And, yeah, that was a bit of an aberration, basically because of the week 17 performance at the Jets or against the Jets. I don't remember which one it was. Where he just ate them up, and it was fun to watch, and the Jets were one of the best run defenses in the entire league last season, and, you know, Miami made them look pretty silly.
Are you nervous about Miller? Let's say, okay, so he's ranked 13, so I envision unless you're drafting at the end of the first round and you go running back, it's very likely that
Lamar Miller is looking to be your RB2. He's being drafted as an RB2 for sure. With Ajayi maybe coming in and stealing so many carries from him, that would make me really nervous. If they went to an actual 60-40 or 50-50 split, man, I don't know if I want my RB2 with a 50-50 split with anybody.
There's some guys you do. I don't know if I love it with a guy like Lamar Miller. Usually I like it with the guy who has a dominant trait, and I don't know that Lamar Miller has a dominant trait. If my running back two has a 50-50 split, I want him to, you know, potentially score 12 touchdowns, be the goal line back and all that, or I want him to catch 60-plus passes. And I just want to know that he has a role where he is going to dominate and not give up anything else. And I'm not in scheme of things. So he scares me a little bit, to be honest. They don't throw it to the running back a lot. And even when they did, I think he averaged something like 7.2 yards a carry, which was, you know, among the league lows, even for running backs. You want a guy who runs a 4.4 like Lamar Miller does to average 10 yards a catch. And he just hasn't proven to be able to do that in his career, which is somewhat concerning for me.
Yeah, he doesn't – I mean, Dolphins fans are going to bag on me on this, but there's plenty of proof on it. He doesn't have the best hands. He has the ability when he does catch it in space to make something happen. He just doesn't always have the best hands. He has a few more drops than I'd like as a Dolphins fan.
I mean – I don't think the running back should ever drop the ball, considering what kind of routes they get thrown most of the time. Like, their catch percentage should be, you know, through the roof, like 85% or something like that. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like Matt Forte type catch percentage there. Just catches everything.
Yeah, what do I know? there's other things to like about Lamar Miller, you know. The improvement in the offensive line should only help him. You know, he got hot at the end of last season when they started giving him a few more carries. He's got the ability to break the long ones, which you got to kind of like. The Jets' performance was just, you know, awesome. You know, 178 yards and a touchdown. And there's just the thing you liked about Lamar Miller last year, though, is the time you can get him in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was a Lamar Miller owner last season. Basically, one of the things I really preach is betting on the other side of a committee. So if you've got a running back who's being drafted in the third round, who they say is going to be in a bit of a timeshare, in the 10th round, I'm going to take the other guy. You know, so last season, Noshon was, like a fifth round pick or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I took Lamar Miller in the 12th. And, you know, it was awesome. And there's just
– Lamar Miller was, like, one of the best values in fantasy football last year. And for anybody paying attention, it was obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird. The Noshon Moreno thing was very strange. Why he stayed – why his ADP stayed so high for so long, it was like no one was paying attention. He came off an injury. He's always injured. And he came into camp fat. I mean, not a little overweight. The guy had a beer belly.
Yeah.
Now, when he got on the field, you could see the talent, but there was no reason fantasy-wise why he should have been staying. I couldn't understand it. I said, okay, I know this is going to happen. I know Miller's going to start to go up, and Noshon's going to start to go down. They're going to meet in the middle, and it's like it never happened. And in the leagues I was in, and I would see people draft Noshon Moreno in like the fifth round, and I mean, I'm a Dolphins fan. I just wanted to laugh in their face. I didn't, of course, because I knew I wanted Miller later on, so I kept my mouth shut. But I wanted to laugh in their face. I never understood it. But now, I mean, we're talking Lamar Miller, what, end of second, beginning of third round?
Yeah, I think he's a third or fourth round ADP right there right now. So you can still get him decently to where he's a solid number two for you if you're kind of looking for that. Which is very, very weird. I don't know exactly why that happens. There's just a couple things. Yeah, I'm always looking to bet on the other side of the committee. So there's if a guy's going to be drafted real high, and, you know, so like Isaiah Crowell right now. So say Isaiah Crowell goes in the fourth round of a draft.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to bet in like the eighth round to pick up the Duke Johnson. And it just works out to where there's five or six of those kind of dealios in the league every year to where they exceed their expectations, and it's just awesome.
And if
those
you pick,
are where you can find the real value.
And if you do a couple of them, like if you're like I like to draft heavy on backs and heavy on wide receivers. When I come out of a draft, I'll have a quarterback or two, usually just one, depending on who I drafted. I'll have a tight end. Usually I'll just have a tight end and one kicker, one defense I draft at the end, and I have nothing else but wide receivers and running backs. So I can, with that strategy, allows me to take chances on multiple of these guys and not just have to pick one. And a lot of times, you know, something hits.
Yeah. I mean, if you get one of those guys to hit, you're immediately going to make your fantasy team 10 times stronger than it was before. I mean, he might be your third back, and it allows you to trade him and your third wide receiver, and you're going to be able to pick up another wide receiver too and slot him in your third slot, and you're going to get huge value out of that. Or, you know, one of your guys at the running back position is going to falter, and he's going to step into that role and, you know, help you carry you to the playoffs. You know, your draft strategy is sound. I always draft more running backs than wide receivers, one QB, one tight end, one kicker, one defense. So I'm ending up with like 6 to 7 running backs on every team. Hopefully 1 to 2 that I feel solidly about. And the other 5 or 6 are the other side of committees. It's just me betting on guys that aren't going to finish, you know, as highly as their counterparts who are drafted way ahead of them. So
what about Ajayi then? Where would you suggest employing this strategy with him, taking him in, say, the 13th round or something like that? Or do we not feel he's really even there yet?
Absolutely. I mean, every time there's sort of the other side of the committee, I'm going to take that guy, especially if he's as talented as the 6-foot, 216-pound Jay Ajayi, who rushed for 3,796 yards in his collegiate career, and over 1,800 of those last season. Just thinking about it, I think he's got like 50 career rushing touchdowns with another 5 receiving. And the things he can do as a receiver with 73 catches in his collegiate career for 771 yards. He was also pretty awesome at the combine with that lower body explosion. He ran a 4.57, which is, you know, pretty good for a guy his size. It's nothing crazy. It's nothing out of there. But, you know, 39-inch vert to go along with that is something I like. Plus, he's got a pedigree. He's a Texas high school product, which is something I always find pretty interesting. A college All-American, and he's done it, at the collegiate level over and over again with 17 collegiate games over 100 yards. Funny thing is, Jay Ajayi was born in London, and he's a like former soccer prodigy.
Yeah, so it's funny to hear him talk. That accent is still a bit muddled.
So he's got, you know, what they're saying now when it comes to football is they don't want kids playing football anymore when they're little kids. They want them to do is play soccer and then switch over to football, because the kids that play soccer just have naturally better footwork than every other kid who grew up playing peewee football.
Okay.
So that's something that's kind of out there, but
yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it'll be something interesting to watch and see. Anything else on the backfield before we move on to Jordan Cameron?
I mean, I'm just glad nobody has to think about the name Damian Williams anymore.
You're not a Damian Williams fan at all?
I mean, do they even sell his jersey for people to be fans of him? Or?
I don't know that they do, but he got into the mix last year a little bit for sure. Again, I had the conversation about the fact that there really was no second back. Williams was an undrafted rookie for us. We brought in and out Daniel Thomas a few times. He's garbage.
And thanks for that, by the way.
Why?
He's now in Chicago.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they picked him up the other day.
Daniel Thomas is in Chicago. Like, yeah. I figured he was just out of the league. Dude, he's not good, man. I'm sorry. Well, you got Matt Forte. You know what? I'm drafting Matt Forte first. If Daniel Thomas is his backup, he's going to have the best year of his life. He's going to be on the field every snap.
Well, the thing is, Matt Forte played 92% of the snaps last season, which is like unfathomable for a running back.
It's going to be 100 now. It's going to be 100.
I think it's the highest in the last 10 years.
Wow, that's crazy. All right. So you're not a big Damian Williams fan. Okay. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to, you know, go blazes or anything, but I think he'll get in the mix a little bit.
Once you add a third guy to the committee, though, it's like, no, just I'm not touching you with like a 10-foot pole.
Yeah.
Like, I won't own a Dolphin back if they say, yeah, Damian Williams is our goal line back. Ajayi's going to play the third down role, and Miller's going to be our 1-2 back.
A fantasy mess right there. You can't touch any of them.
If they say something to you like that, just don't draft the Dolphin backfield.
Yeah, no, I agree. No, we haven't seen anything about that, honestly. So I'm just kind of waiting for training camp to see what it's more going to look like or what we think it's going to look like. Kind of have to rely on the beat writers for that information.
Yeah, I think it'll be Ajayi and, Miller, pretty much straight split. I don't know if it'll be a straight split. It'll probably be 60-40 Miller, in my opinion, as of right now, from everything I've read, from what I've seen from both guys. And I think they're going to try to keep Ajayi fresher because they're worried about that knee thing. Or they might just ride him until it's gone. Who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, that's just get 2-3 good years and be done. All right, let's talk about probably who's the highest rank in his position out of all the Dolphins, and that's Jordan Cameron. How are you feeling on him?
I really like Jordan Cameron. I've really liked him for a long time. I really liked him last season, even though he ended up being injured, which sort of sucked. He's got a concussion history, so that's the part that really scares you about Jordan Cameron. Other than that, like, he's put up some elite, tight end numbers in terms of just basic counting stats and metrics in the last two seasons. Jordan Cameron was a former basketball player, switched over in high school, played, wide receiver at USC for a couple years before, making the final switch to tight end in his last two or so years there. And that led to, him being drafted to the Browns, which I'm sorry for anybody who gets drafted to the Browns. I apologize on behalf of the world. But he didn't really have a chance to break out, and then we called a breakout a couple years ago because they brought the tight end whisperers together, and they all sort of just combined to talk on this one team. And it's like Rod Chudzinski, former tight end, Norv Turner, the maker of Antonio Gates and others, a few other guys who are just tight end gurus. And they're all on the same squad, and we're like, do they have a 6'5", 245-pound tight end who can run a 4.5? Oh, wait, they do. That's the guy who's going to break out. That's Jordan Cameron. Mm-hmm. And, you know what he did? Like, 80 receptions for 917 yards and 7 touchdowns.
Yeah, that was great. A great season. It was a Pro Bowl season.
And you want to know what's even better? His quarterbacks were Brian Hoyer and Johnny Football and Brandon Whedon and Colt McCoy and Jason Campbell and Seneca Wallace.
Yeah, a lot of bad quarterbacks.
Jersey with everyone's name on it because Jordan Cameron deserves one of those jerseys for the guys he's had to play with over his 4 or 5 year career there.
For sure. So where do you see his numbers being, considering the different targets they've brought in for Tannehill this year in Miami? It's how does he fit in? Is he the red zone target, especially with Parker maybe slower to get into this offense? Is Cameron Tannehill's new red zone target?
I don't know if anybody is the strictly red zone target in Miami. I think it's going to be a lot of spreading it around. Let's see, last season, they only had 2 receptions by their running backs, 20 by their wide receivers, which was 75% of their overall, and then only 5 touchdowns by the tight ends. So, just going off those numbers, you think the touchdowns are going to be distributed mostly to the wide receivers and in between the three. I happen to think that Cameron can do better than what happened last year. The league average for tight ends touchdown scoring is right just a hair below 7. So I think it was like 6.8, and 25% or so of touchdowns usually go – of a team's touchdown usually go to a tight end. So you got to think if Tannehill throws, you know, we'll call it, you know, 28 touchdowns, Cameron's looking good for 7.
Okay. I mean, 7's a good number. 7 would match the number he had 2 years ago. It would also match the number that Clay had 2 years ago as well.
Yeah.
Now, Clay spent most of last year hurt, too, and I think maybe that hurt some of the, how much they would throw, because they really didn't have very good red zone targets. I mean, Mike Wallace is not a red zone target.
He made good on all his red zone attempts, though, last year, somehow.
Yeah.
I can't even explain it to you.
I don't know. Yeah, but he's really not a red zone target because he really doesn't run all the routes.
He's not a prototypical body.
No. Brian Hartline was definitely not a red zone target. It was just, I think it's a little different this year. The Dolphins set out specifically to improve the red zone game because, as you probably know, they were the number one team in the NFL in red zone trips, but once they got there, it didn't look so good. And that is what the whole remake of this roster on the offensive side was about this year, is trying to get the ball into the end zone.
I can't agree more with that. And let's see. Tannehill threw it to the tight end 125 times last season, and that's with Clay hobbling around for much of the year, playing decoy and, you know, doing whatever else he was doing, you know, sniping some touchdowns. And over the past seasons, Clay's, what, got 186 targets for 161 catches, 1,364 receiving yards, and nine touchdowns. So basically what I think Jordan Cameron can do, so I think he can catch about 85 passes in the sort of Jarvis Landry mold for 972 yards and 5 to 7 touchdowns.
That would be a great year, man. That would be great.
I have him ranked as a tight end number 9, and that's probably too low. We're kind of moving him up there as we see how that projection kind of comes out, and just, you know, realizing the fact that this guy, I mean, last year this dude averaged like 15.6 yards a catch. Just crazy, crazy numbers coming from a tight end athletically. And you just got to like that there's now a quarterback who likes to throw to a tight end and who just can actually throw in general, because that's an improvement over whatever Jordan Cameron's had in his career before.
For sure, for sure. Where you had mentioned before about you like to draft a team and you like to look and you like to see the good offenses. You want to see Packers on your team. You want to see maybe a Patriot or two. You want to see the high octane. You want to see some Colts. Where do the Dolphins fit in on that? When you've drafted a team, if you have more than one Dolphin, are you feeling nervous? Are you like, that's okay? I mean, I know it obviously depends on the makeup, but where do the Dolphins fit into that scheme? Because I've always drafted the same way. I like to walk away looking at, I've got a bunch of players from high-powered offenses. I'm feeling good about my team.
Yeah, so what it is right now, I did the projected depth charts for every team. We do this thing called fantasy football power rankings. We use a combination of fantasy points scored and fantasy points allowed to come up with an overall best team in the NFL. And it's a pretty good predictor of the teams that are going to make the playoffs and be, you know, very good, because their offenses are going to score more points and their defenses aren't going to let teams score on them. And the Dolphins came out as a top 10 unit in that kind of just breakout. But offensively, I think they're maybe just slightly above league average.
Okay.
And it's basically because I think it's going to be a lot of spreading it around to where I think it's going to be a lot of spreading it around in general.
Okay.
So it's like the offensive line worries, and then just spreading it around between everybody. They didn't have a 1,000-yard receiver last season, but for the first time in franchise history, you had a 4,000-yard passer and a 1,000-yard rusher, and those guys are both returning this season. So I think they're just going to end up doing a very similar thing and spreading it around to where you maybe have three receivers, Stills, Parker and Landry all end up with like 800 to 950 yards and six touchdowns apiece or something.
Yeah, if they continue, let's say though they follow that suit and they're one of the top teams in red zone trips. I mean, to be number one again 2 years in a row isn't likely. But let's say they're in the top five in red zone trips, but they could take that red zone percentage up a lot higher and get into the top 10. How does that feel how do you feel then about Tannehill?
I feel very good about Tannehill if they could do that. It's just the question of can they, and what's most likely to happen. Is that a good bet to make with everything we kind of know right now?
Well, the way they've structured this offense, though, it was with the intention of that. So they've epically failed if they don't.
Yeah, and let's see. There's some things to kind of consider here. You know, they were above average in points scored last season, slightly above average in pace. Threw it more than they ran it according to league averages. League averages last season were like 58% pass and 42% run. And the Dolphins were at 61%. So if they can solve the red zone woes and start getting up into the 400 sort of range in points scored, you definitely got to like them a little more. I mean, 13 points off what the Saints did last season. So they just got to score more points. And now with this extended sort of extra points and things like that, will there be more opportunities for them to go for two? I think that's going to a lot depend on early in the year. If they can improve, because if they're not going to be good in the red zone again, I doubt they're going to go for it on more plays, go for two. Even though Sturgis had like one of the lowest field goal percentage rates in the league, even though he finished pretty highly among fantasy kickers, because most of us don't penalize you for missing, even though you can get cut.
Yeah, I don't anticipate Sturgis goes into the season as our kicker, actually.
Really?
Yeah, because of he hasn't been great. I mean, he's been okay. He hasn't been great, but he's very injury prone. He's had groin injuries twice, and he hurt his groin a few weeks ago in a kickball tournament.
Oh yeah, I did hear that. That was funny.
And I'm just thinking that there's a couple vets out there, and they've had to bring in another guy, but that guy hasn't been very good just to kick because he hasn't been able to during minicamp and OTAs. There's a chance. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I have this feeling that maybe it's 50-50. Sturgis isn't even our kicker starting week one, that we go out and get some kind of aged vet or something.
Yeah. I mean, let's see. If the Dolphins can kind of, you know, score a touchdown even a field goal more a game, they're in like the top 10 units.
Yeah, they're close. They're like right on the edge of trying to break into the better offenses, really.
That's the thing. They're like average to maybe slightly above average. Now is when they need to take the biggest step. Now you take that step from, you know, slightly above average, can you be one of the top units? And if I was sold on them being a top unit completely, I think these guys would all be a little bit higher in my rankings. But because I said, you know, they like to spread it around quite a bit, that drags everybody else down, unfortunately. And, you know, if there was just one guy there you felt like plant your flag on that they were going to get everything, they'd be real high in the rankings. But, you know, it's kind of one of those – if there's anybody I want to own on the team, it's Tannehill because he's got the weapons.
Okay.
Like Tannehill and then Jordan Cameron and then potentially probably Lamar Miller.
I got you. So if you're going to walk away with two Dolphins players, if you walked away with Tannehill and Cameron, that might make you feel better than some other combinations as of right now. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah, I could see that as well.
I mean, the thing is, it's like, when there's offenses that just spread it around a ton, you don't know who's going to get it any given week. So the thing is, the players you want to own in those offenses are usually the best red zone guy and the quarterback. So that's why those two guys get that little bump for me. If I have to own two Dolphins, those are the two I'm going to own for it. But I'm also, you know, a little bit lower, and I'm just skeptical and realistic in most of my projections that I think they're going to eat at each other's value.
Okay, that's fair, and that doesn't mean they won't be a good team. It's just fantasy yeah. why fantasy football is different than regular football. It just is.
Much.
All right, man. Why don't you tell us about what you got going on about the, you know, your website and your podcast, and tell us everything.
Oh, sure. So basically, I'm with pyromaniac.com. You can follow us on Twitter. It is PYROMAN, the number one AC. A couple different guys run the Twitter account. I run the Twitter account as well. So if you have any specific questions for me, just, you know, ask for Stags or Stag Party. I'll be glad to answer them. And if I don't get around to it, anybody else will answer them. Our draft kit is now on sale. It's $20. It's got, you know, projections and our rankings for every position. We've also got our strength of schedule, which loved Tannehill oh so much the other seasons. We do a lot of what's called tier ranking systems.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just talk. That's one of our favorite things to talk about. If you guys don't know what tiers are, you need to start using them immediately. It basically just puts all positions in a kind of one sheet feel, and then breaks it out a little bit more than that. So maybe for quarterbacks, as a collective, we all have two guys in tier one, and it's Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers. And that means before I should ever go into tier two and draft a player like Peyton Manning, that both these guys in tier one need to be gone. And you can kind of easily compare that across like every position, and it just allows you to see values in your draft days. And we're also big on like making your own rankings, because if you don't like the team, you know, we'll give you all the advice we can, but if you don't like the team, then it's fantasy football, guys. It's got to be fun.
Yeah.
If you're spending money, great. You know, that's great. It shouldn't be a business making venture for you. It's got to be fun with your buddies. It's fantasy. Play it like that. And that's basically all. We're also on Facebook. You can like us there, and that's facebook.com/pyromaniac. It's about all we've been doing right now. We do a couple podcasts a week. We just did our first episode on Wednesday nights. It was called Pyro Podcast Light. That is going to be a 1 hour to 1.5 hour, you know, mini version during the season on Fridays, with injury updates, DFS advice, and other kind of, you know, ranking moves over the week. And we do our regular podcast during the season on Tuesdays. That's just called Fantasy Football Fire. Do that on Tuesday nights, and if you got a couple hours to kill, it's a good way to do that.
And I will just sit here and say, and honestly, that show is awesome, awesome, awesome. You guys are absolutely hilarious. I love how you always have a bunch of clips from a movie or something kind of, you know, lined up and ready to go, and you make it fit within the show. And I like the one I think you did somewhat recently. It used quotes from the movie Airplane.
Yeah, I sat that one out, unfortunately. I had to finish the draft kit. But, they just did the Airplane one. I think Airplane 2 is coming up this week or here in the near future. But, we get a lot of Will Ferrell clips in there, and just it's so good when it hits the lips.
Yeah, I like that's right. I heard the Harry Carey, the Will Ferrell Harry Carey one. That was awesome.
Yep.
And I think he did Borat recently.
Oh yeah, Borat was good. I mean, there's so many funny movies with funny one-liners that, you know, don't necessarily get enough love, and, you know, we're just trying to spread the love for fantasy football, and, you know, just have a little bit of fun with it. Instead of being dry and, you know, somewhat humorless like other people can be.
Yeah, agreed, definitely. All right, man, I definitely appreciate it. Anything else?
Oh, no problem. It's my pleasure.
Anything else before I wrap up?
No, just if you guys have any fantasy-related questions, follow us on Twitter, shoot us a message somewhere. We'll be glad to answer it and hopefully help you win your league.
All right, awesome, man. All right, everybody, I appreciate you listening. If you want to tweet the show, it's at UnsquishTheFish, or follow me on Facebook, it's also UnsquishTheFish, and then you can email the show, UnsquishTheFish@gmail.com. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. It's very exciting to me. I'm a huge fantasy fan, so hopefully maybe we'll do this again sometime soon. Thanks a lot, everybody. Appreciate you listening.